Leadership Business Radio Show. Good Saturday afternoon to everyone. Hope everyone's having a beautiful, beautiful March day. We're officially in March. That means February is over. Thank you. I mean, spring is around the corner. We've been having a great week of melting weather, though my name is Pamela Muldoon, so that means I have an Irish name, not necessarily Irish blood. St. Patrick's Day is coming up, and what is it we say in Minnesota? One more big snowstorm around St. Patrick's Day, so I'm sure we're going to get at least one swipe. But I'm really enjoying this beautiful spring-like weather we've had in the Twin Cities and throughout Minnesota, and hopefully you have as well. We have another great show, guys. We are 2 months in. We're kicking up month three. That means time is flying, and with that, I've just been truly blessed with getting an amazing group of folks to join me in collaboration on this little business radio show. Just to give you a sense of what's coming up here in the next couple of hours, because we do have a two-hour show. We're on 1 to 3 on Business 1570, of course, every Saturday. But you can also live stream us on the World Wide Web. NextStageBusinessRadio.com is the place to be. And, of course, my producer, Stephen, also known as my husband, to make sure we get those shows archived. So we will be archiving this show as well. But coming up in just a couple of minutes here, I've got one of our team of advisors, the legal advisor for the show, Jeffrey O'Brien, is on deck waiting to talk about what to consider when you're buying or selling your business. And so we're going to have a really great conversation about two very important parts of the business process, and take some notes if you're thinking about getting into business, especially if you're thinking of purchasing an already existing business, or if you're thinking of getting out of business. Take some notes today. Also coming up, as we always do, we have our organization of the week, and this week we have another chamber on deck. I'm real excited. We're going to have Peter Turok calling him. He's the president of the Anoka Area Chamber of Commerce, and I found out, guys, get this. He's a Brown Institute grad, just like me. So he's a former radio guy. I love it. I'm bringing him out of the woodwork. So that's going to be fun. We also are going to be talking today. Aaron Wyke was on last week from Five Technology, a web development firm. And he's going to come back on at 2 o'clock today. And he's going to share, we're collaborating together on an internet marketing seminar that's coming to the Twin Cities in May. And he's going to be talking about that. So that will be really interesting. And one of my good friends, I'm so proud to have this gentleman on my show in the 2 o'clock hour, Bob Berg. He is the author of Endless Referrals. It was written back in the 90s, and he's just known as the original go-giver. He's just an amazing man who has this beautiful message about how to really build friendships while you build your business, something I truly believe in. So his new book, Go-Givers Sell More, just hit the racks a couple of weeks ago, and we're very fortunate to have Bob calling in from Florida in the 2 o'clock hour. So, whew! Jam-packed again, Jeff.
Yes.
I'm telling you. All right, so we're going to just lock and load, as I like to say, and get her done, and talk a little bit, go dive right into our team of advisors segment. So first, of course, hello, Jeff O'Brien. How are you?
I am doing well, thank you.
Thank you again for taking time out of your busy Saturday to be with us.
I'm happy to do it.
Well, we appreciate it. We know the audience appreciates it, and you always bring such interesting little topics to the table.
We try to. There's things that, you know, we attorneys think might be kind of, you know, maybe boring or basic, but the more I talk to people, the more that people like to hear about it.
You know?
Nobody wants to hear about the esoteric stuff. You just want to hear basic stuff. So, you know,
we're closet attorneys, maybe. That's what we are.
That could be.
Well, today's topic is all about buying and selling the business, that part of the process. And so let's go ahead and dive in. But like you said, we like to start at the basics, and
right,
we like to start at the foundation. So let's start with that process of making the decision.
Should
we start there?
Yep, exactly. I mean, the basic steps of the decision, either buy a business or sell a business, or the steps of a transaction, there's actually about 10 steps. And it starts with that decision to sell your business or the decision to buy a business. And we've talked, when Todd Turosh has been on here, we've talked about succession planning and some of that from the business owner side, about planning the exit strategy.
Right.
But when I talk about the decision to sell or buy, it's the immediate decision, basically saying, now is the time.
Okay.
Or if you're buying a business, deciding that you want to do something else. Maybe you left a position where you were an employee. Maybe you wanted to become your own boss, and you have an idea of want to buy a business, and you have some money, you know, laying around, and you want to do something with it. So that's what I mean, you know, so the decision to sell or buy. I mean, obviously someone has to decide they're going to sell their business, and someone has to decide that they're going to buy the business.
So there's always at least two people involved in the process other than the attorney.
Exactly. That's what, you know, in contract law, we attorneys call it meeting of the minds. There has to be a meeting of the minds where the two sides decide they're going to do a transaction together. That's the basic first step.
So let's talk a little bit about this buying, because it seems to be the more natural place to be. I'm ready to purchase. And now let's also just kind of touch on, and if there are any differences, you know, franchise purchasing versus an existing business, you know, such as the family business. And of course, we did talk a little bit about some succession planning stuff in previous conversations. So my assumption is there's a little bit of that involved as well.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit later about some of the considerations on the seller side.
Okay.
And with franchising, I'm glad you brought that up. Franchising, we probably can devote an entire show to that, but what I will say in this context, franchising obviously involves a third party.
Okay.
If you're buying a franchise from someone else that holds the franchise rights, obviously the company that's selling the franchise is involved in terms of their consent to the transfer. So there's a few more hoops to jump through in that process.
Well, in a franchise, it alone has its own rules or regulations or just contracts that they've developed.
Yep, there's certain required disclosures and things like that. But it's happening right now. In the last year, I've represented at least, I think, two clients that purchased an existing franchise. So that, you mean the franchise that had been sold to someone else.
Okay.
And then that person decided to sell their franchise territory to my client.
Okay. So it's almost like the two different the two examples I gave, but they become kind of merged.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So if you're a buyer out there looking to buy a business, and there's a lot of that going on right now, and you know, obviously with the way the credit markets are right now, it's still hard to. There's not the deal flow like we used to have maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. But there are some getting done, and we'll talk about it a little bit later about some mechanisms in terms of seller financing, other ways to get those deals done right now.
Right.
But for the right deal, they're getting done. And there's a lot of people that are, because of what's going on in the economy, they're saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to get out of my business. So there are a lot of business owners that are looking to sell. So if you're a buyer, there's some opportunities out there, and it's just a matter of finding them. And there's a lot of different places to go, and, you know, I could go forever just talking about some of the resources available for companies that are out there locating companies that are ripe for acquisition.
Okay, so just clarify that. So there's actually other businesses where their job is to constantly look at the business market, per se?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
I mean, on the sell side, there's business brokers that are trying to, you know, that there maybe have people contacting them interested in a business, and there's people contacting them to list their business, and they kind of facilitate it, and then we as the attorneys help do the paperwork. So it's almost just like when you're selling a house, you're listing it with a real estate agent. A lot of times you go to a business broker, and there's a lot in town, Phelan, Sunbelt, Calhoun Companies. There's a whole bunch of them out there locally. They'll actually use them as a facilitator to help find that person to do the deal with.
Well, I would think the process of buying a business, I mean, where do you start? You know, I mean, there's probably the philosophy a little bit of doing something you passionately love or that really interests you, and then there's simply the business decision. It's a good business that's already got a customer base and, you know, all those different things, and I just want to be a business owner. I don't want to actually be involved in it.
Right. So it starts as, you know, if you're on a buyer's side, maybe there's some business that interests you, right? And you go to, say, a broker and you find some businesses that are available generically and, hey, that interests me. So then once you get that point and you've been introduced to your potential, you know, transaction partner.
It's almost like
partner,
a courting, like you're getting
married. A little bit. But what you do next is then the parties sign, you know, the non-disclosure agreement. We talked about that a couple weeks ago when Greg Perlberg was on the intellectual property context. Similar here, obviously you don't just talk, you like each other and sign paperwork. There's a lot of pre-steps you'd take before you get to that purchase agreement.
Okay.
And the first step is the non-disclosure agreement, because obviously the buyer needs to see some financial information on the business from the seller, and vice versa. The seller is going to want to see, look at some information on the buyer to find out if they're a suitable partner for it.
What are some pieces, when you say information, can you give me and the audience a little idea of what are some pieces of information I should be aware of or should be looking at?
Financial statements,
okay.
Tax, in this step, in the preliminary
yep.
stage here.
We're just looking.
So, yeah, you sign the non-disclosure agreement, then you get into what, the term due diligence is what's used when you're investigating, the background on a business as you're moving it towards a closing on a sale.
Okay.
And there's really two phases of due diligence, what I call it preliminary due diligence, where you're looking at the financials of the business, tax returns, financials, past performance. The buyer needs to know how the business has performed so he or she can make an offer to the seller in terms of the price.
Okay.
So that's the basic thing is you have to decide, what are you going to pay for this business? So all that kind of historical financial information is really the first step in terms of looking at inside the business and seeing if there's if it's something that the buyer is interested in purchasing. Same thing on the seller side, especially if you're going with seller financing, you're going to want to know what the buyer's experience is in the industry, what their track record is, because you're going to have some skin in the game, even after the sale. So there's due diligence on both sides of that preliminary step.
And when you say industry, is it also important to be researching the industry?
Absolutely.
So that there's a comparison model
Absolutely.
Of some kind?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You need to know, you need to know what the competition is, what the industry as a whole is doing. It's vital to know not only what the business you're purchasing, but what the climate is for the industry in general.
So you know if it is a competitive, as part of the market, it is competitive, whether it's or the prices too, are they coming in low or are they coming in high in terms
right.
of pricing for their industry or their
right.
market?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, exactly.
I know we're going to really start breaking down some of the things that we need to be considering when buying. Of course, we'll flip the switch to selling. So what we're going to do here is why don't we do this? Because I know we want to start getting into some real meat here, and we need, of course, to pay the bills just like everybody else, right? So why don't we take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into some more of that homework piece, that due diligence piece
sure.
that you're referring to.
Because yep.
I want to make sure, especially as we get into the financing piece, if there's options, that people are really considering some of the homework elements. So
yep.
we're going to come back in just a bit. We got Jeff O'Brien, Mansfield, Tannick, and Cohen. You're listening to Next Stage Business Radio. I'm Pamela Muldoon, and this is Business 15. 70. Welcome back to the Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm Pamela Muldoon, your host. And in studio today, once again, we have one of our advisors of the team, Jeffrey O'Brien, who is a business attorney over at Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. Good to have you as always, Jeff.
Good to be here.
And we're having a really... I'm telling you, this stuff is interesting.
It is. It's fun. It's fun.
And I love getting into conversations with you because it's funny. You'll have all these notes, and then you'll start talking, and I'm like, ooh, so you mean this? Ooh, see, I feel like I actually know more than I know, so I appreciate that.
Well, it's always nice to have the business person's perspective, the more human being approach as to us ivory tower guys that sit around and talk about the esoterics of asset sales versus stock sales.
Right, which we are going to chat
yes.
a little bit about because, mm-hmm. obviously, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about buying and selling a business and some of the things that you really need to just be aware of as you're going through that process. And I think this conversation is very timely. We kind of touched on it. You mentioned, there's been a change in the economy, and
mm-hmm.
we've seen a lot more people take different financing routes to actually finance or purchase a business. So before we went to break, we were talking about some of the diligence process
mm-hmm.
To really do some of your homework. So let's kind of pick up where we left off. We're doing some more homework on making sure that if I want to buy a business, I'm looking at all the right little pieces. And now you as the attorney are involved. I just want to make sure that we're always plugging our team of advisors here.
Right,
so
right.
What are other advisors that are usually involved in this process at this time?
Well, throughout the process of the business ownership, and we talked about this, I think Todd and I talked about it the first weekend, of having your CPA, your financial advisor, your business attorney, and your estate plan attorney. And when it comes to if you're using a business broker, in this case, you'd be having a business broker as well working with this.
Right.
That's really the key pieces when it comes to, a sale or purchase of a business. Where the attorney comes in, a lot of times when it comes to my desk, the parties have found each other. They've discussed, they've signed, maybe have come to me early on and got a non-disclosure agreement, and, I just give them what I've got a form that we give out to our clients, to to go through that process. Okay. Then they exchange some of the basic financial information, and they talk about what terms they're going to have. And then they come back to meet, and this is where the rubber meets the road in terms of the lawyer getting involved,
okay,
is the letter of intent.
Okay.
And sometimes the client will do it themselves, but a lot of times they come to us because, well, we do them quite often, and so we kind of know kind of a basic structure. And it really is a letter. I mean, it's a letter coming either from the buyer or seller or the buyer or seller's attorney, and it just goes through some of the basic, what I call the skeletal terms of the deal. And I like to use them. I don't use them on every deal. If it sometimes depends on the dollar amount involved in terms of the purchase price.
Okay.
But for more complex deals, I like to have the letter of intent because, believe it or not, going to the attorney to do a letter of intent actually can save you money in the long run. Because at some point, if this goes forward enough, when you have actually drafting a purchase agreement and other documents, you're going to have an attorney on both sides, you know, putting these documents together, negotiating language. If the terms are already set by the buyer and the seller in the letter of intent, then what's left for the attorneys to do down the road is just that, draft the language.
Okay.
The terms are there. We aren't trying to renegotiate terms in the process of drafting documents for the transaction itself.
So really, the letter of intent is almost like the pre-contract.
It is.
I mean,
it is.
It's like having a little courting contract.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. You know, they call it a non-binding letter of intent. The only thing they're usually binding for is there's usually a clause that says it says exclusivity, which means that neither side's going to talk to anybody else about a different deal for a period. And sometimes it's 30 days, sometimes it's 60 days, sometimes it's 90 days. It's whatever they agree on.
Okay.
And that's
okay.
Really the only piece that's binding in the letter. If something goes wrong and the buyer decides he doesn't want to buy it, the seller can't go file a breach of contract lawsuit for breaching a letter of intent.
Because it's not really a contract.
No, no.
It
is a letter of intent.
And we're just making sure everybody knows what's going on.
Right.
And it's in writing.
Right, exactly, exactly. It's more, to me, really, it's more of a tool to kind of streamline the process so that everybody's on the same page throughout the transaction. So as we go into that second due diligence piece, which we'll talk about in a minute, and signing documents, going through the financing process, and then closing, everybody stays on the same page. It's really kind of it's kind of the roadmap.
So one of the things, because there are some basic elements that are involved in the letter of intent, and one of them are these terms of service that are the deal terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just touch on a couple of different ways that the deal can actually take place in terms of that.
Sure.
That's all right.
We'll start with, obviously the parties are going to set a purchase price,
yep.
And usually the buyer is going to be going to a bank and getting some kind of financing. Not always. They can pay cash. But they usually go to a bank, you know, if there's SBA financing available, all sorts of things. But very often the seller is asked to carry back some of the purchase price, meaning they're going to finance a portion of the purchase price. It could be a percentage of it or a certain dollar amount. So the seller gets a promissory note and, you know, subordinate interest, security interest to what the bank has and things like that. So this is where the seller has to be concerned about the buyer's financial position because it's, you know, there's going to be a portion of their money that could be tied up for years to come on a promissory note.
Absolutely.
So that's one piece of that has to be, if there's going to be any kind of seller financing, always good to have that in the letter of intent so that there's an understanding right away and have even agreed to the, okay, if I'm going to have this promissory note, it's going to be payable over this period of time and at this rate of interest. And the primary lender, if there is one, will sometimes change that. I mean, they really drive the bus
so
on
really,
that.
Now you've got another team member possibly involved, your banker the loan's coming from if you have a loan.
Just like when you have a franchise sale where you have the franchise company involved, you're going to have the lender involved. They're going to steer some of this. The party's going to agree to what they want, but the lenders are always going to do what they can underwrite, and then the parties have to go back and maybe either amend the letter of intent or just go forward and include those amended terms in their purchase agreement. So,
okay, excellent.
The other piece that comes up at the outset in the letter of intent stage is whether or not the seller is going to be involved after the sale in the business.
Okay.
And this can take the form of being a consultant or an employee. Usually it's for about a year
or
two after most, if it's an SBA financed deal, the SBA will only let them be there for like 1 year.
Okay.
And then
okay.
they can agree after the 1 year is up maybe to stay longer, but you can't agree at the outset to be there any longer than a. That's just one of the rules
okay.
they have.
Okay.
But it's always good, especially if you're, like, say, in a service business, say you're buying an insurance agency or a financial advisory firm or something like that. If the asset is customer relationships, you want the person that has the relationships to hang around for a period
right.
of time to help with the transition.
Absolutely.
And then you get into more complex terms that let you know that you hear the term earn out.
Okay.
So there's a way of there's based on the type of the business, there can be a portion of the purchase price that is based on customer retention, revenues. So if the person is involved, if the seller is involved after the transaction, as a consultant or an employee, they might have some performance targets to hit to get a portion of their money. It's not used as much. Sellers, of course, if I'm representing a seller, I don't want something like that. I want to get as much of my money up front as possible.
Sure.
But it's something that does come up.
Is this then why in some situations where it's maybe been more of a public sale or as we've maybe followed a business, the owner later becomes the president or a vice president of that same company
mm-hmm.
because somewhere along the line they made the agreement for that person to continue working in the business?
Right.
Okay.
Earnouts, consulting periods, seller financing all can be tools to bridge gaps in the purchase price as well, right? I mean,
right.
If there's a difference in terms of what someone's willing to pay versus what someone's willing to sell for, you can, subject, of course, to the lender, saying, no, we're going to do this or that, there's possible ways of bridging that difference by saying, well, how about this? Or how about we'll add a piece where we'll pay you a salary as an employee for a year. Or
right.
and you'll work in the business for a year as vice president or something like that and help with the transition. All those different things are mechanisms that we use to get the deal done.
So is there anything else in the basic deal terms or any other basic pieces of the letter of intent that are fairly common?
Obviously, contingencies are written into the letter of intent. So it's contingent on financing. It's contingent on
okay.
a period of due diligence. Usually it can be 60, 90, 120 days, whatever they want to agree to. And this is where you drill down and get more extensive. So you're looking
right.
at the actual employee benefit contracts.
So is this where that more extensive due diligence that
exactly.
you had referred to before?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. So you're
okay.
looking at more, more in-depth historical financial information, the actual employee benefit plans. Looking at inventory, looking at equipment that's there, touring, plants if it's if there's a physical location, touring those locations, and then looking at doing lien searches with secretaries of state to make sure that there's that someone else doesn't have a hook on the assets that you're trying to buy.
Now, is this part of your role as the attorney to help look for some of this information?
Absolutely.
Is that really
absolutely?
Okay.
Absolutely.
So with some of this more extensive due diligence, why would the cost go up or down, for example, with an employee benefit plan piece? How does that kind of affect?
Well,
just to give an example.
I should back up one step and talk about the difference between an asset sale and a stock sale.
Oh, okay, sure.
And depending on the type of how it's being structured, some of these things matter more than others. A stock sale, the buyer buys the seller stock, meaning they take everything. They take the assets, they take the liabilities, they take the contracts, they take everything
okay.
as if they were the owner and it's theirs. If for a buyer, you want to do the opposite, though. You want to buy the assets because that way you can leave some of the liabilities, in the company and take only what you want. But if you've got, 401k plans and healthcare plans and some of those things in effect, you darn well better know what they are
right.
and what the rules are in terms of if they continuing on with them into the new company.
Because obviously that's that's affecting the expense side
exactly.
of the balance sheet.
Exactly.
So you
exactly.
got to know those numbers. So
exactly.
So much to think about. It's not just just buy it. it's a lot of work, but definitely you want to have your advisors on your team, which is why we're having this conversation. So if you're in the process of looking to buy or sell, here's some really great tips that Jeff is providing. And we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue through this 10-step process that Jeff has for us. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the seller as well. So this is Next Stage Business Radio Show. I'm Pamela Muldoon with Jeff O'Brien, and this is Business 1570. Welcome back to the Next Stage Business radio show. I just love that beginning of that song. I just got to listen to the whole thing, Jeff. What can I say? Well, Steve Perry in the background, it rocks my Saturday world. What can I say? Like I like to say, it's my show. I can play my music. I like that. All right. So I'm sitting here talking with Jeff O'Brien from Mansfield, Panic & Cohen, and we're having a really great conversation today about what to really consider when buying and selling a business. We're really focusing on the buying aspect because I think that's where a lot of our listeners are probably focusing on or considering. But we're dispersing some seller pieces in the middle. And before we went to break, we were talking about that due diligence process on a more extensive level. So let's pick up there. What other considerations? We talked about, deeper financials, employee benefits, maybe some inventory. What other considerations should I be looking at when I'm going through this process?
Well, obviously, if the business is leasing property to operate on, we have to take a look at the lease.
Okay.
And there's going to be, obviously, you have to look at, in particular, the assignment and assumption clauses in the lease to see whether or not it's permissible. Look at the term of the lease. The lender's going to care about that because sometimes they'll actually want to make you enter into an extension of the lease with the landlord, the new buyer.
Okay.
Because that parallels the life of their loan. Obviously, they're not going to make a 10-year loan when there's a 2-year lease.
Okay.
Because then they'd be financing a company that might be, homeless in 2 years.
Right.
Slight
problem.
So looking at the lease, talking to the landlord, and there's going to be the landlord's going to have to consent to an assumption of the lease. Sometimes there's personal guarantees involved. I've even seen situations where the seller, if you've got a seller entity, the owner of the seller entity has to personally guarantee because the landlord isn't necessarily comfortable with the buyer yet.
Okay.
So the seller, and then you negotiate. If you're the seller, seller's attorney, you try to negotiate that period to be as small as possible. So there's a lot of things that go on involving the real estate lease.
Okay.
And the same thing with equipment leases. If there's equipment being leased, same thing. You have to look and see what the rules are about assigning them and making sure that you have the consent to assign them.
Right.
We mentioned before about lien, the liens that the Secretary of State has, there's the Uniform Commercial Code, UCC interests that are filed with the state, and that's what we pull and look at. Sometimes equipment leases are listed there as well. All those things because the seller is, if it's an asset sale, which is more common, the seller is transferring title to the assets. If that's the case, the buyer needs to make darn sure that they have the title to sell. They need to make sure that they're getting everything covered.
Right.
So the worst thing you can have, and believe me, I've seen it. We could do another show, probably a month of shows.
We keep coming up with new ideas for shows.
Yeah, on when deals go gone bad. Well, when deals go on without the attorneys involved.
Ouch. Really?
Yeah,
really?
It can be...
We're having this discussion. There's so many elements involved. How could you possibly? It would bother my mind to do this without an attorney.
Because some people think they just know better.
they just don't want to deal with you. Is that what?
Well, they think they're saving money, and then they spend twice as much to fix it.
Oh, they end up dealing with you at some point anyway.
Exactly.
Well, and of course, with some of the leasing piece, obviously the space is vital, but the equipment. I mean, a lot of that equipment, I'm assuming, is also vital to the production and running of the company.
Yep, and that's when we talk about in the due diligence in the second due diligence phase, looking, touring the locations and seeing what's there. If there's equipment that's obsolete, the buyer may say, why don't you keep that? I'll get a new piece. I'll lease something else. I'll buy something else. So
sure.
That can be a consideration. So that's all the stuff that goes into the due diligence piece. And then we move to the meat of it, which is drafting the purchase agreement and all these ancillary documents, the lease assignment, the consulting agreement, the employment agreement, which will, of course, for the buyer, they're going to want to have a non-compete covenant in any agreement they have,
okay,
whether it be the sale agreement or an employment or consulting agreement with the seller. They don't want, obviously they're paying good money for this business. They don't need the seller to turn around, sell it, take the check, and then turn around and start the business again and say, hey, I'm open under a new name. They're going to have a non-compete period. And we're going
to
talk, in the employment context, we're going to talk in a couple of weeks with my partner, Phil Trobaugh. He's going to talk employment stuff, but one of the things he's going to talk about is this non-compete issue.
Good.
So we'll learn a little more about that in a few
weeks.
It's
an issue for a lot of people, especially in the last couple of years with the change of employment.
Yep. So that's, and the law is a little bit more generous in enforcing non-competes in the context of the sale of a business. You can get away, normally for employees it's about 2 years. I've seen him get away for as much as 5 years in the sale of business context, because there's different considerations. You're not talking about affecting someone's livelihood. You're talking about the fact that someone paid good money for a business, and they deserve to get the benefit of what they paid for.
Okay.
Not having someone start up like not having the seller start up next door and compete with them. So it's a little bit different considerations.
Okay.
So then, the documents are signed, and then you go through to the, any contingencies that are in there, financing, other things, landlord consent, if it's a franchise or company consent, all those things. Once those are satisfied, then you can go to the closing table.
Okay.
And the money changes hands, the final documents are signed, everything gets transferred over, bank accounts get opened, old ones get shut, all those kinds of things. And then the buyer owns it, then the seller is doing something else. And it could be working in the business,
right.
It could be something else. And when we talk about a lot of things to consider when you're buying a business, we've talked previously on this show about things that go into the decision when you're selling a business. And it's not just the transaction itself. It's you got to re-look at your estate plan, reevaluate that, see if it needs to be updated in the context of the fact you don't own the business anymore. What are you going to do with the sale proceeds? You got to talk to Todd Turhorst to make sure that you've got them invested so you can live out your retirement years. If you're a serial entrepreneur, you'll probably go start something else. I was just talking with a client of mine this week, and his dad sold his business a couple of years ago, and he thought that was the retirement, and his dad decided to start another business.
Let's do it again.
So that's how serial entrepreneurs retire. They start another business.
Right.
So all those different things. So
they could be going through the selling process or the buying process while they're going through the selling process.
Exactly. I mean, they could become, they're coming up with some new concept. All the more reason to have that non-compete in play. So.
No kidding. Oh, my goodness.
So that's really, you can really boil it down to about 10 different steps in the business, and then a couple, some things to consider on both sides. But the one thing I would tell the listeners is, unless you're a serial entrepreneur, you may be only doing this one time in your life.
Right.
You may be buying once, you may be selling once. Well, again, we attorneys, other advisors that deal with this, accountants, financial advisors, we do this quite frequently. We do this a lot. We can deal with these issues. We know the process.
You say you buy and sell a business almost weekly, right?
Yeah.
You're doing it so often.
Yeah. It actually saves you money in the long run by coming to your advisors up front, because we can help guide you through the process.
Well, and I know that this is a very subjective question, but there's a lot of moving parts. What is kind of an average time frame that someone should consider going through this process?
It's all over the map.
Yeah.
It's all over the map.
That's a tough question, I know.
It can be very quickly. If it's a smaller business, not as much diligence to do.
Okay.
It can be, half a year to, or more if it's, a large transaction with a lot of moving parts.
Well, and the only reason I say that is because a lot of times, like you mentioned earlier, the decision seems to come up fast, but people don't realize all the moving parts, and so what they think is going to get done in a couple months could take 6 months or 12 months, depending.
And that's one of the reasons sometimes they don't come to the attorney, because they think it's going to take too long, but there's a reason for it. Sometimes it's good to slow it down, have us have the professional advisors look at it, make sure that both sides have the best deal they possibly have in terms of tax structure and everything else, and then go through these steps to make sure that at the end there's no problem where they have to spend 2, 3, 4 times as much after it's gone bad.
Right. Well, Jeff, we've gone through a lot of information. Of course, we'll have this archived on the website as well for people to listen to again. But I always want to make sure that we know how to connect with you as an attorney. So let's give the Mansfield Tannick website once again.
Yep, it's www.mansfieldtannick.com. And then you can email me, JOBRIEN, at mansfieldtannick.com.
And you, of course, also have your own personal blog that you do, and that is called what?
It is called The Businessman's Lawyer. It will soon be linked to our homepage. Our homepage is going to be the be-all, end-all for everything Mansfield Tannick and Cohen. But right now it's at blog.jeffreyobrienesq.com.
Want to make sure that everybody's aware of that, and of course we're going to start building all this information out on nextstagebusinessradio.com too, as our advisors provide more and more great content. So thanks again for being with us, Jeff.
Thank you.
Always appreciate it. All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we got Pete. He's from Anoka Area Chamber of Commerce on deck for our Organization of the Week. This is Next Stage Business Radio Show on Business 1570.